Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. A murder on Milwaukee's north side 2 years ago is the jumping-off point for a week-long series in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, launched yesterday on the issue of witness intimidation. The series not only appears in print, but includes multimedia features at the website JS Online.
The series was reported by Ashley Luthern and John Diedrich, who join us in the Lake Effect studio. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thanks for having us.
So witness intimidation has been an issue for a long time. In fact, Milwaukee put a strategy into practice to deal with it. When was this, and what were the systems put into place?
In 2007, there was the murder of Maurice Poli Jr. He went forward and testified against the person who shot him. And ultimately, a few days after he appeared in court, he was shot and killed. After that, District Attorney John Chisholm put together a specialized unit to protect witnesses, and the idea is to investigate and aggressively prosecute those who are most at risk for intimidating witnesses. And that unit has grown over the years, and the number of cases has also grown.
And so what we found was that looking at the data from comparing 2005 to our most recent data, 2015, we found the number of cases have gone up 250% during that period of time, from 53 cases to almost 190. And we also found that the punishments for those increased. But, you know, we don't want the impression to be, okay, well, problem solved, because it continues to be a major problem. And one of the things that we found in our reporting was that the number of jail calls has just exploded in the last couple of years.
And that's jail calls. Explain the significance of jail calls.
So that's really the sort of the medium, if you will, for intimidation, that individuals end up getting locked up. And one of the ways that intimidation is communicated is over the phone, which people say, that's crazy. You know, I mean, they record all the jail calls, but there are ways that individuals try to elude the authorities on that. So they have to up their game, if you will, to try to keep up with the criminals. But what they're trying to do is intimidate people. There's a phrase in the system says, no face, no case. And if you can keep the witnesses out of court via over the phone and so forth, that's going to effectively undermine the system. Now, the volume of calls has just exploded in the last couple of years, and the reason for that is the charges that the county can charge to inmates has dropped dramatically because of some rulings and some federal rules that have changed. Now, it's dropped from multiple dollars, like $2, $3 a minute, down to 15 cents a minute. So the number of calls are now topping 200,000 calls over a 10-week period. So we're talking about 20,000 calls a week that they're having to monitor. So it's a complicated system by which this phenomenon is investigated.
And I would say that this type of intimidation, or what it most often occurs in cases involving gun violence, gangs, and it really occurs a lot in domestic violence cases as well. And that's something that the District Attorney's Office has put a huge focus and effort on, is trying to, you know, even if they can't convict someone of domestic violence, they often are able to get them on an intimidation charge down the line.
Now, are jail calls the primary way this is taking place, and what are some of the other ways that witnesses are being intimidated?
Well, right in court, you might see individuals being subjected to comments as a witness comes off the stand, or hand gestures. You know, somebody might be so bold as to almost point like their fingers like a gun at somebody's head, mean mugging. There's also a lot that happens on social media. That information is put out, either sometimes snippets of video will be caught in court where the witness's face will be put out there, or communicated on Facebook or Instagram or some of these other ways.
And keep in mind that a lot of this even starts at the beginning of someone deciding whether or not they're going to report a crime. I've talked to many residents in neighborhoods in Milwaukee, and there's just a constant question of weighing, do I call the police for this offense? And, you know, if they come to my door, which a lot of people don't want them to come to their door, will that mark me for some kind of intimidation, whether it's just comments or, frankly, we've seen things as serious as people getting their houses burned down.
Now, you tell the story through the lens of a shooting that took place in 2015. Tell us more about the death of Eddie Poe and why the case was emblematic of this problem.
So this case starts off, it's July 11th, 2015, and listeners will recall this was a particularly bad year in terms of homicide, and this was one of the many shootings, fatal shootings that happened. There was an altercation that happened, ironically, not far from a peace rally, a peace picnic that was going on in the Garden Homes neighborhood. There was a dispute, which is not entirely clear what all the roots of the dispute are, but there was money and drugs and some jealousy over girlfriends that were involved. And Eddie Poe was an individual who was involved in the drug trade, and Antonio Smith was as well. Guns were drawn. Eddie drew his gun first. He ultimately put his gun away, and then Antonio Smith, who is the subject of our investigation here, he ultimately shot and killed Eddie Poe. As is often the case, there were witnesses to this shooting, and how those witnesses were dealt with is really how the case and the story unfolds.
And, of course, Poe's death was not the last one that was linked to the shooting, right?
That's right. So, as I said, there was a crowd there, but two individuals stood out as key witnesses. One was the girlfriend of Eddie, that's Brianna Eskridge, and then John Spivey, who was a friend of his. They were both right there. They were really the most immediate individuals who were on hand, and John Spivey went to Eddie's side as he was really struggling for life, and then ultimately Brianna came. What was interesting about that case is, as we're talking about the reluctance to identify, you know, the shooters and witnesses to give information, actually on his deathbed, if you will, as Eddie was dying, he identified an individual by a street name, by tone. And that really distinguished this case. We do see that sometimes is what is called in the courts the dying declaration. But that that nugget turns out to be important, and so does ultimately the information that come from the witnesses in this case.
And 8 days after Eddie Poe is shot and killed, Brianna Eskridge is shot and killed. She's ambushed on Concordia Avenue. And at first, you know, it's publicly reported that it was perhaps a robbery-related motive, but quickly investigators realize, no, she was clearly targeted.
So is the problem just one of scale, that there are so many cases that it's overwhelming the efforts to do anything about it? Or are there other ways of going after the problem that have worked elsewhere but maybe have not been tried here?
Well, in Milwaukee, it's interesting. We shortly after this case, the Antonio Smith case, became public, we took a step back and looked at the issue. And what we heard from authorities around the country was that Milwaukee is really a trailblazer in this way, in that they, by the district attorney's office doing the investigation, that's very different from other places. Before that, here it was the sheriff's office. And the problem that would happen in the view of the district attorney is that cases were not pursued as aggressively, and as prosecutors or ultimately the investigators were seeing problems, they weren't being followed up. As Ashley noted, ultimately, in some of these cases, the underlying crime, they may not be able to have the proof of it, but the actual intimidation, the efforts to thwart the system, they do get convicted on. So we found that as we looked around the country, the scale is high in Milwaukee. It's high in other places as well. But the efforts here have been considered groundbreaking by other jurisdictions. The volume, though, is what's really astounding and confounding the officials, is that, you know, prosecutors are saying there's witness intimidation in almost every one of these. Certainly domestic violence, it's rampant, and in these gun cases as well. And I should just note at the beginning, it wasn't totally clear. It seems now in hindsight, well, of course, Eddie Poe's girlfriend got killed. That should have been that pattern should have been clear from the beginning. I think it's important to sort of, there's sort of fog at the beginning of these things. And it wasn't really clear that these were connected right away. It is one of the real tragedies in this case, in that they were not able to intervene and help Brianna Eskridge. But, you know, the other irony is, Brianna Eskridge did not give information to the police. She did not cooperate because probably of fear of this sort of thing. But as happens, word got around that she had talked to police, even though she didn't say anything, and that was enough to set those wheels in motion.
So if law enforcement and the justice system have a hard time getting witnesses or potential witnesses to discuss what they've seen, how hard was it for you to tell the story, to find people who were willing to talk about the issue for a news series?
A lot of what we have reported is document-driven. We've looked at hundreds of pages of records, whether it was from the Department of Corrections, Circuit Court, Milwaukee Police records. And we also were there in court as this case played out, because this case does play out in a variety of stages, and people will be able to read along and follow along. But through that, we were able to come to know people involved in the case. We were able to interview investigators. We did have contact with the victims' families, through seeing them in court. And ultimately, that's how we were able to put this all together.
So what do you think will surprise your readers the most about the issue of witness intimidation from reading this series?
Well, I think, you know, when this story first unfolded, and it's written in a way that might be different to people who, you know, read a newspaper in a regular sense. We call it a narrative. It's a six-part series that builds in some cliffhangers, if you will, and it has some of those narrative elements. The thing that really distinguished this case was the degree to which this witness intimidation and witness elimination was sought. The concept of actually bailing somebody out of jail, potentially, to silence them. We have that element in here. We have the brazenness of using jail phones and video to communicate threats, to continue selling narcotics, which ultimately, from inside prison, which will fuel the ultimate criminal endeavors on the outside. I think as we went through it, this was not maybe a typical case in that it is brazen, it is a shock to the system, but it's this kind of case that prosecutors and investigators say, we have to make sure that we bring justice to, because this kind of case really threatens the justice system. What they're really trying to do is work the odds in their favor to say, I can do this and I can get away with it by getting rid of the witnesses. And I should also point out, Ashley noted, working with witnesses, there is an individual in the story who ultimately was targeted for death. And we've spoken to him at length, John Spivey, but we've gone to great pains to protect his identity because, you know, we're working in the real world here, is that this is, you know, a life and death type of matter. And it's really important, I think, as we are journalists, that we're responsible and understand what the stakes are here.
John Diedrich, Ashley Luthern, thanks to both of you so much for your work and for telling us about it.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thanks for having us.
John Diedrich and Ashley Luthern produced the six-part series on witness intimidation called The Intimidator. It's running this week in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You'll find a link at wuwm.com.